Hello, hello, hello. Welcome to Talk of the Town Takeover Edition. So my name is Liz, and I am a podcaster, and my podcast is called Coffee Combos and Liz, and it can be found on Spotify podcast and the coffeecombosliz.com website. And I am here with three of my amazing friends, and we're going to be hanging out with you for 2 hours. So Dimitri, how are you doing today?
I'm doing all right. I'm happy to be here as well. Hope everybody had a great holiday. My name is Dimitri Coles. I also have a little bit of a podcast as well, Black Bento. I like to label myself an idealist. I'm a grassroots organizer here, and most recently ran for office here in Waterbury, Connecticut. So I'm glad to be back up here again and have this conversation with you guys and everybody who's tuning in.
Fantastic. I'm passing it over to Mr. Charnell Bush, who is doing some exciting stuff in the Waterbury scene as well.
Yeah, hello. This is Charnell Bush. Like Liz alluded to, I am running for Connecticut State Senate in the 15th District, coming off the high and exhaustion of hosting Thanksgiving for my family. And so I'm just excited to kind of be reinvigorated with my friends here today.
Fantastic. And last but certainly not least, the theory buff, Mr. Bilal Tajuddin. How are you doing?
Good. Good morning, everyone. My name is Bilal Tajuddin. I'm an East End resident. I live in Bowley Manor neighborhood. Waterbury resident all my life. Like Dimitri and Liz, ran for office this past election cycle for Alder and had a primary, the second ever primary we've had for Alder since we went to Alderman by district in 2015. So very excited, happy to be here, and we've got a lot of great stuff planned.
Absolutely. So we're planning to start off with a game, right? Like a little appetizer, right? We're still full from Thanksgiving. So, right, we don't want to just jump into the main course. We want to ease you into it. So Bilal, he's going to give us a game that I'll say is a little bit of spicy. It's a little bit of like a spiced eggnog type of game. Right, you don't know what you're gonna get, but then we're gonna get into the main course, but I'll tell you about that later. So Bilal, do you want to take it over?
Yeah, I will. So we're gonna play a game modeled off of obviously we're all millennials, so we love our podcast. There's one of my favorite podcasts, Food for Thought, does games at the top of their show, and one of them is sort of like an either or scenario where you are presented with two different topics and you have to pick your favorite and potentially defend why it is your favorite. So we've got some local options and a few conversational options. So I'm going to open up the floor.
And if I can interject
real
quick, if you are listening online on either the Facebook page or one of our personal pages, definitely we want to see in the comments, what are you saying either or? So that, again, if you are on Facebook, go to any of our Facebook pages, or we created an event page, but yep. I'm sure if you Google, you'll find it.
Yes, yes. We're live streaming right now on Facebook as well. So our first either or scenario, it's a hot topic issue with myself and my cousin. Your favorite taco food truck, Los Garcia or Hugo's?
I can go first because mine's pretty simple. Didn't know the other one existed.
So
Los Garcia is 100%. Quesadillas are incredible.
Yeah, I'm going to follow suit with Charnell there. I didn't know the other one existed either, but the chicken quesadillas from Los Garcias are undefeated. So
yeah.
Go,
Liz.
I have not been to either.
You so haven't been to either?
I know. The look of shame is you know.
Okay.
So definitely I have to add it to the list. But yeah, Los Garcias, that's the big one. It looks cool.
Los Garcias and Hugo is right across the street from Los Garcias. Guys, come on.
I drive by. The lines are cool.
Yes,
but yeah.
I do enjoy Hugo's, but I have to admit, Los Garcias just has such a variety. But they're both delicious and they're both great. And we're happy to have both of them in Waterbury, I think, right behind the mall. Our next either-or scenario, this one's a little more spice in that eggnog.
Uh-oh.
Which would you rather have first, a skate park in Waterbury or an ATV trail in Waterbury?
Thoughts?
I'm going skate park, guys.
Yeah?
I'm going skate, because our parks do not have anything for, like, the teenage kind of population, and I would love to see, like, skate park. I already see, like, some cool graffiti going on, right? I definitely see some fun happening for our older kids, so I'm going skate park.
Okay.
I'm going to abstain from this one.
Too much spice in the eggnog.
Yeah, I think they're both great ideas. You know, I know a lot of writers. I know a lot of skaters. Yeah.
If it has to come first, which one?
Gun to my head, I'll choose the ATV park.
ATV park? Okay, yep. Okay. Charnel?
Yeah, I'm torn. So I have skateboarders who are, you know, across the street from my place all the time, and it's always fun to see them try, and I cheer them on every so often. But I also think that folks who want to ride should have a place to do that. Mm. And part of what's pushing me towards the ATV trail is just the narrative around everything. And, you know, I just want people who are trying to have fun to do it safely. And I feel like providing that gives them that chance.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm a big fan of the skate parks, particularly because like Liz, you mentioned, like, you're seeing graffiti. I think graffiti is, when it has its right place and space, is a great avenue for public art.
Correct.
And I would love to see, like, that lets you put your tag, you try something new, you get to play around with spray paint, which is, like, an interest I think everyone has naturally, is spraying things. Like, it would be great.
Right. And, like, my other issue, right, so, like, kind of with Charnel alluded to with the ATVs is, like, are people still going to have an issue with them, right? Mm. Like, are they still going to be like, oh, like, we gotta not have them filled up at the gas station? And, like, I feel like we have a little bit of complain culture. So I don't know if the ATV park solves it.
Yeah, I mean, one day I'll let you all listen to my long, drawn-out plan of how you can make that happen, how you can, like, transportation and all these other things, right, and moving things back and forth to avoid those issues, but I won't do it here today. We have a specific amount of time.
On Facebook Live, we've got a lot of heavy favor for the ATV trails. Ooh. Someone, our dear friend Raphael, is saying, when you live next to folks with ATVs, an ATV trail it is. Which is, I don't think anyone's ever been woken up by a skateboarder going by. So I think there's probably a fair argument there to be made. Our friend Erica is saying she loves us. Erica, we love you too. Our next either or scenario. This one is tough. Mm. Which is your favorite bakery? Would it be Pan del Cielo on East Main Street or International Bakery on Baldwin Street?
Oh God, you guys are gonna hate me.
Don't say you haven't been to either of these two, Liz. Liz, as soon as we are off the air, we are getting lunch at Los Garcias, and then we're getting custard cups from International Bakery. I just don't understand.
You got it.
Oh wow, you made a decision already. Huh?
Listen, I mean,
custard cups.
I'm just a little bit of maybe a Waterbury hater. I'll say it. Maybe. I got to learn to fall in love with the city again.
Okay. You
know, I got to learn to fall in love with the city, well, so I'm up for the challenge.
All right. Dimitri?
I've only been to one, and that was actually one of the times I came here to WATR before, and I went to International Bakery, and I had the custard cups, actually. So, yes, they are very good, and I recommend them for everyone.
Because you are a sensible person, Dimitri. You understand.
I like to believe so.
You make good choices.
Yeah. Sure. No,
I'm international as well, and I've only been, like, the first time was an accident because of my sister. She was like, "Oh, we should stop here," and I was her taxi mm-hmm. driver, and so I did. But the second time, custard cups is what sold me and brought me back.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely.
So we should all do that. Maybe not today.
They're great. They're great to bring too to a party cups. Too. That's great. Our next either or question is Another sweets related one. You can tell I made the game. Which is your another favorite bakery? Brooklyn Baking on Reedville or Sweet Maria's on Meriden Road?
No, oh, wait.
It's like choosing between your favorite child.
What?
Which one?
Dimitri, we haven't heard from you. Go ahead.
Yeah, so let me go on this one because I have two. Like, I love the apple donuts from Brooklyn. But I'm going to have to go with Sweet Marie's, actually, because growing up, there's literally a childhood story behind this. Like, every birthday, my mom would get me this cake from there called the Pink Cloud. Mm-hmm. And I don't even know I just know it has whipped cream and strawberries in it. And I fell in love with it ever since. And I will get that every year for that. So I'm a little bit biased, but that's why I'm choosing Sweet Marie's.
Okay. All right.
Oh, Charnel,
you are having a time.
I'm stressed out. I tell you, so I have to give a little context. So my first job here in Waterbury as a teenager, it was Chuck E. Cheese's, and I was a party host, and I got so many, before I could afford Sweet Maria's, let's be real, but I got so many of the cakes, and I fell in love with Sweet Maria's before I ever walked in the door, so I was sold on it. But Brooklyn Bakery Donuts, I used to be down the street from me, and yep. 50 Cent donuts, you can't beat them.
That's true.
And I bought my niece's birthday cake from Sweet Maria. I'm stuck. So I'm for cakes. I'm splitting it for cakes. Sweet Maria's, for donuts. Brooklyn. Wow. I don't care. I break the rules.
Liz.
Yeah. So Brooklyn Bakery donuts all day. Can eat them all day.
Absolutely.
However, don't like their cupcakes. So Sweet Maria's for cupcakes, 100%.
Okay.
So if I had to do either cupcakes or donuts, I could do a donut any day. I can't do a cupcake every day.
That's a fair point.
Right, at least hips probably won't like that. So
that's a fair point.
Brooklyn Bakery.
Okay. I would say, as I said, I live in Boulay Manor. I could see Sweet Maria's, like, if there wasn't the U-Haul place right there, I could see them from my front house. So I feel neighborly to Sweet Maria's, and I will go there to get, if there's someone in the neighborhood who has a birthday or an anniversary coming up, I'll go to Sweet Maria's, get some cupcakes. You know, you have to support your local spot. And I'm Team Sweet Maria's, I got to admit.
Thank you.
I have to admit.
I was so conflicted.
I know, it's a tough one.
That.
Well, to not make it any easier on any of us, our next either-or question is, what would you rather see inside of our parks, pools or splash pads?
Oh, man.
And a silence has fallen over the room.
As Dimitri looks off into space.
Right.
Pondering.
Right.
Like, do you want me to go first? Because
I was going to say, while you guys think this through, it looks like our Facebook comments are saying that Brooklyn Bakery is winning the fan favorites category.
They're misguided right now.
They're misguided. You heard it here first, folks.
I'm singing every day for Brooklyn Bakery, but Sweet Maria's for special
occasions. Yes, Raphael coming in with the middle man of the middle ground.
That's me. I feel like I'm in that boat, but I can't isolate one from the
middle
other.
Middle ground. This is a partisan issue.
You know how Dimitri votes.
So all right. So pools or splash pads? We've got one in the comments saying splash pads. Our friend Steph O'Loughlin.
You know what? I would prefer pools, to be honest. Just because, you know, swimming, I feel like it's a life-saving skill. But, I'm going with pools. Yeah, I say pools. I would say pools because of that reason.
Yep. Liz, Charnel?
Charnel still looks. So here's my issue, right? So I've been out there to Bristol, and their splash pad is fire, right? So, like, our splash pads, like, sometimes in the inner city, it's just like, pew, pew, right? It's just, you know what I mean?
Yeah, sometimes that's true. But I have, you know, Hamilton Park recently got a new splash pad that I believe is pressure activated. So when kids are on it, it turns itself on. So you're saving water. You're only using it when there are people.
But does it have a bucket that fills up and then splashes out? Does it have, like,
you know? That's a good question.
So I'm going with a pool.
It does sound like an amusement park.
Right. So, like, so.
Saturation station.
If I'm going based on just, like, the splash pads that we have or that I've seen, I'm going with a pool just because you can bring, like, a pool noodle.
Mm-hmm.
It's the noodle. Oh, man. Growing up, I loved pools. As an adult, you can ask anyone who knows me that I'll sit by a pool and watch you have a great time. But I think pools, like, they're not as clean as we want them to be. So I'm one of those people.
Splash pad.
So I'm a splash pad guy simply because it's more sanitary. I think you could do more things with a splash pad. Like Liz was saying, like, there's contraptions and things you can add to it to make it a more lively and engaging experience rather than floating, you know, and having to watch your kid amongst a bunch of them. So.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Like floating and going on, I don't trust any of that.
Yeah, our comments are saying splash pads. We need more; they're more accessible for more kids. But the city also does need more accessible pools. We have another comment saying splash pads. Pools are too much maintenance and work, and they cost too much money.
Now, Bilal, you had some interesting thoughts and ideas about the pool splash pad debate.
Yes, so there is a debate around pools versus splash pads inside cities. The New York Times a couple years ago ran an article saying, "Why is it that kids of color are less likely to know how to swim?" And it's because there is a national trend on taking pools out of city public spaces, right? Sort of relegating them to YMCAs or after school programs or, you know, other places not Waterbury. You have to pay for them. They have, you know, clubs and memberships where you can have a pool. There's a national trend on young kids of color just don't know how to swim either as well or well enough to to, unfortunately, if something were to happen, if they were to slip into a lake or a pool or something, they're not safe. Yeah. And that's because there are a lot of good arguments.
Yeah, right. I'm one of those people.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. And there's a lot of good arguments to be made for why pools are so much more costly and splash pads are so much more efficient and safer. But it's hard to make the argument when it's just like, well, okay, if there is someone who wants to swim, what if they have a high school that doesn't have a swimming pool? Like, what if you wanted to become a swimmer for college? Or like, it kind of limits you in so many spaces if there's not a public park or park with a pool available for you. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Looks like our comments are, we also have one saying, pools with special hours for adults only to do their lap swims.
Ooh.
And swim programs for seniors. That's a great idea. Especially
that's a really great way to be ingenuitive in kind of leveraging your assets in the community. I love that.
Yep. And especially because for workouts, water-resistant workouts are helpful for older adults too. That's great. All right. So our next question, our next either or, this is another one where it's hard to pick, but Dominic and Pia's or Dominic and Vinny's?
Oh, this is easy.
Oh, this is easy.
Dominic and Pia all day. I'm not.
Yeah. Not it.
Yeah. You're not really a Waterbury resident if you don't answer Dominic and Pia's.
Wow.
I didn't say it, but
hot take.
Friendships are on the line.
I mean, now, granted, Dominic and Pia's all day, but that's a bold statement from you to me.
Well, I mean, Dominic and Vinny's for people who like move to Waterbury, not people who
Yo,
Dominic and Vinny's.
I stand by that.
Who move to Waterbury?
Yeah, I stand by that.
Wow.
So let me just say this though.
I choose Louise.
Oh, no. Louise, the dark horse candidate,
wasn't an option.
Can I actually? All right. So a few years ago, I actually thought that Zachary's was the best pizza spot in Waterbury.
Okay, Dimitri.
And it closed out of nowhere, and it broke my heart one day. But
Zachary's, the one downtown that had the name spelled out what they thought was pizza sauce, but it looked like blood?
Yes.
That's Zachary's?
Yes.
The big red Z that looked like a blood?
I'll die on that hill by myself.
But I will say this. I will say that you say Dominic and Vinny's people who moved to Waterbury. I am not an original Waterbury resident. I came here at 10, right? And so...
smart.
Well, look, I was 10 years old. I didn't have a choice. But even then, I still remember going to get my hair cut downtown. And while I was waiting in the line of 15 people, you know how that works, mm-hmm. you know, I got sent to get Dominic and Pia slices for my family and my cousins while we waited. So one of my first memories in Waterbury was trying hard not to drop the pizza on the way back.
Mm-hmm. Okay. All right. Fair. Okay. We got a lot of love for Dominic and Pia's in the chat box. Renee is saying Louise. Renee, we can talk about that later.
Renee.
Our next question, sort of again on the parks theme, is which is your favorite park or a park you enjoy going to more? Fulton Park in the Overlook neighborhood or Bunker Hill Park in Bunker Hill?
Oh.
I feel like this is unfair.
These are two great parks with a lot of good amenities.
Okay.
However, it's...
Oh, okay. Take a moment, Charnel. What's up?
I'm just saying that those two parks are the two parks that everyone points to in Waterbury for aesthetics and optics, right? I think that Waterbury has a bunch of parks.
That's true.
You know, and so I think it's easy to lean on those two, but neither of them are my favorite park.
Wow.
Neither of them are my favorite park. I brought my nieces and nephews to Bunker Hill Park because newer equipment and things like that. Mm-hmm. And I can sit on a bench and observe. Fulton Park is spacious and pretty, but I am so simple that my favorite park is that I'm an adult. I'm 32. Like, I like Chase Park on Sunnyside because the basketball courts are always empty in the mornings, and it's just easy to get in, get out. And so it's quiet. The kids are there's a splash pad over there. You know, there's a playground. I don't know. It's close to my home, and it's just a nice cozy little spot.
Yeah, Dimitri, Liz.
Out of those two, I would definitely choose Fulton Park. I kind of grew up around the neighborhood, so that's where I would go to. I love Park Pizza, always getting like a Slurpee from 7-Eleven. So
yes, that is the quintessential.
You have to.
That's the litmus test for if you grew up on that side of town. If you did not go get a Slurpee from 7-Eleven and a slice of Park Pizza, your zip code was somewhere else.
Yeah, you didn't get the full experience and everything. Sorry, and then it was cool. Like, everybody took their prom pictures over there. Yep. And then, you know, my church did walk-a-thons there. It was just a lot of things that were going on there. I didn't start going to Bunker Hill until I was like a teenager. And by that point in time, I wasn't going on the swings or anything there.
Out.
And I hated playing on the basketball court because they have a double rim.
Yep.
Double wings get you.
I like that you can walk the loop over there at the Bunker Hill Park. That is like the only kind of like really like kind of like easy, simple, just loop.
Yep.
You know, you're trying to get your steps in. So I'm going with Bunker Hill Park. Okay. Also, you know, parking isn't great for either of them, but easier to get to Bunker Hill Park versus Fulton Park. And so I'm going with Bunker Hill, but also wanted to drop this information as well for those who want to call in and join the fun live at 12:30. We're opening up for calls, and the call in number is 203-757-1320. Bilal, I don't know if you want to put that in the chat as well.
Yes.
Call in number is 203-757-1320, and calls are open at 12:30.
Yeah, absolutely. I would say for the on the parks debate too, I would have to say Fulton Park, not only because that was where the neighborhood in which I grew up, but Fulton Park has such a great piece of Waterbury history because it was designed by the Olmsted brothers, who designed Central Park in New York City. And so just like it has a lot of great built-in architecture and everything there, such a deliberate design. It's a fantastic little spot. There's a lot of love for Fulton Park in our Facebook live chats. And Amanda is saying, yes, Slurpees, Slice, walk around Fulton Park. It's a spring tradition. You got to do it.
I see a Bucks Hill mention in there.
Yeah, Zaleska is saying Bucks Hill, just saying Fulton Park is second. That's a fair comment, Zaleska. Bucks Hill has a good park, too. Appreciate it. They had the splash pads early on, too, I believe.
Yes, they did.
So our next one. This is a little more rum in the eggnog on this day, man. After.
I feel like we're already.
I know. I feel like we're already tipsy. But it's, which would you rather, a vocational high school or a neighborhood high school? Not to say permanently or forever, but if we were to build another one over the next year or so, which would you rather, vocational high school or neighborhood high school?
Neighborhood.
Okay.
Neighborhood high school, 100%. I think that. As far as just our public schools, we don't have enough public high schools, and there's too many kids in them. I just think that we need to create more space for them, and probably a space that's a little bit more modern, and just is conducive to new learning styles and new learning opportunities. I think we don't need to build another school where there's a gate, you know, and the kids get funneled in and get chosen and not chosen, whether it be by lottery or whatever it is. I think that kids should be able to go because it's in their neighborhood. They're in the district. They get to go and get to have a quality education.
Yeah.
No bars, no limits.
Yeah. Dimitri, Liz.
Oh, yeah. I'm just going to agree with Charnel on this one. I think it would be easier to incorporate into the community. I've know people who go to public high schools, and I'm like, I don't know how you're in that district for that school and everything. So, just logistically, I think it just makes sense. But
to have another neighborhood school.
To have another neighborhood school, but
yep.
Yeah, I'm just going to go with that.
Liz?
As a person who did not like school, I want some vocational something, because I can't sit in class all day. Oh, God, like trauma of thinking about school. I was a kid who went to WAMS, and it was the first time I enjoyed like the school experience, because I wasn't sitting all day. I got to do something that was like physical, you know, so I like the idea. I also wanted to go to the agricultural school because I wanted to be a farmer. Yeah, I was that kid.
That explains why you're doing that community garden in the East End.
Know, it's in my blood.
I see you plug it.
Right. So I like the idea of kind of like this hybrid of these two, like if it was a neighborhood school, so not like a lottery. Like, I just think these should be things that are in the DNA of schools. Like, yep. I think we're past the point of just go to school.
Yeah.
You need to have something else in the DNA. But if I had to fund either one first, I'm going with like a vocational school.
So we have a question in the Facebook chat saying, how do you define neighborhood school? Ooh. So what we're saying for a neighborhood high school is essentially, we have a lot of schools in Waterbury that are nested into a neighborhood where, you know, young people can walk to school. It's sort of that community schools model. For a neighborhood high school, what we're saying is closer to a more traditional high school, but, you know, in a part of town that maybe doesn't have its own full access public high school.
So similar to like Jonathan Reed.
Yes. Mm. Yep.
But for high school.
But for high school, correct. Yeah. So that's sort of how we're defining it. I would say There's some comments in here saying that we are looking for more vocational schools. Raphael says we need skills to pay the bills, tech skills. Mike is saying neighborhood, but more focused on vocational training. I think it'd be great. We need to have, as someone who cannot literally do anything to fix anything at all, like my first call is always to like my brother or a friend who knows how to do something, a vocational school, it would have been great. It would have been great to have those handy skills so that you have at least a basis to build off of. Because there's a time when you can't call people to come help fix your lawnmower.
Yeah, no, I'm...
That's what YouTube is for.
Not when you're playing with gasoline. I'm going to call someone who might know what they're doing.
Because I'm all for learning skills. Like, I'm all for people learning a trade and being able to, you know, turn that into skills that you can be paid for, right? And I think that it's in places like Waterbury and other big cities who have, you know, tech and vocational schools, there's always an either-or conversation. Mm-hmm. And I used to be an admissions rep, so I traveled all over Connecticut to high schools, and there are public high schools in wealthier towns, we'll call it that, right, who have all the things we're talking about. Mm. They have the college prep track, they have an agricultural track, a tech track, some, you know, an there are options for kids to at least explore those paths. And we can have those things. It's just a matter of having vision and actually planning for funding those things. We don't have to choose. I don't think.
So what I'm hearing is it's not necessarily a big ask. And I feel like sometimes when we're talking about lower income cities, it is, like you said, that either or. Mm-hmm. And it's nice to bring into the conversation, like, other people just have these things. Like, right. They're just normal.
Right.
Like, it's not, you know, I'll say, like, the Squid Games of, like, it's either this or
right.
that.
Right.
Like, it is, you can have both.
Absolutely. I've been saying for a little bit now that 2022 is going to be the year of abundance.
Ooh.
We can have it
preacher.
All. We can have it all. I mean, we have enough to have it all, right? It's going to be the year of enough to go around, right? And
it
so
it has to be, because we saw it's
absolutely.
Not enough for it not to be.
Right, 100%. So this is going to be our last one. We're going to go out on a lighter note that, I don't know, given how some of these questions have panned out, I don't know if we're going to have a lot of opinions on this one.
Inflammatory.
and then we're going to go to a break for a couple minutes and we'll come back. But the last question on the way out is actually... Ami's Bagels on East Main Street or Ami's Bagels on Thomaston Ave?
Look.
Now, if you don't know why this question is being asked, then that tells me something.
Thomaston Ave. Impulse Co.
Thomaston Ave?
Yep, Dimitri? That's the first time I've had it. And
okay.
It became like a routine for a little bit. So, nostalgia.
All Thomaston right.
Ave.
All right. I've never been to the one on Thomaston Ave.
Oh,
so
I thought you were going to say you've never had an Ami's Bagel. I was going to have a heart attack.
So I'm definitely going to go with East Main Street.
Okay.
Yeah, I worked across the street at the Enterprise from the East Main Street Ami, so sauce, egg, and cheese on a French toast bagel on East Main all day.
See, and that's the thing, though. The one on Thomaston Avenue doesn't do breakfast sandwiches.
What?
You can't get eggs on it.
I don't like eggs.
Oh, well, so then Thomaston Avenue is for you. It's been great, Liz Bullard. It's been lovely having you. We're going to ask you to step out of the studio now for the remainder of the 2 hours.
My favorite foods.
It's got to be for me. It's the Ami's, and not only, again, East End resident, but the Ami's on East Main Street just has it going.
It's got a good vibe.
And it has all the cream cheeses already. Mm-hmm. This has really just been a shameless plug for all of my favorite places I like to go in Waterbury. and I would recommend anyone got hungry during this, get a bagel, get a donut, go get a cupcake.
Great Black Friday.
Get a custard cup from International Bakery.
Below, before we go to break, do you want to drop the number again?
Yeah, so we're going to come back after a couple minutes with a break. Our number to call in to the studio is 203-757-1320, and you can ask comments on the Facebook chat, and we'll be back in a couple of minutes.
All right. Welcome back. We are taking over Talk of the Town. My name is Liz, and I am joined with Dimitri, Charnel, and Bilal. And if you're late to the party, where you been at? We just came from a spicy edition of This or That, where we discuss some Waterbury favorites and some state and local issues. For those just joining, if you're interested in participating in the conversation on Facebook, find us either on our Facebook pages, Google WATR, and you should find our feed. And if you want to call in and join, our call-in number is 203-757-1320, and we're taking calls at 12:30. But we're entering the main course, and we are talking about running for office, being a candidate. So for those of you who don't know, I have recently came off of running. This was my third time. Dimitri and Bilal ran for the first time, and Charnel is running, and he's kind of doing a little something similar to Bilal with primarying. So we've all been in the political arena in a very different way, and so we're going to jump in and talk about that. And so Bilal and Dimitri, how did it feel coming off of, like, your first campaign cycle?
So I lost by about 40 votes. And I think I came off feeling so energized to keep working, right? Because you remember, so the primary night was back in September, and I hosted some people back at my house. Friends and supporters and volunteers, and we made some burgers. And
can you explain for the listeners who might not know, what does it mean to primary?
Right. So the primary process, in terms of how it fits into the political landscape, is when you are within a political party. So as a registered Democrat, I said that I'm a party member. I would like to put my name in the ring for local politics to sit on the board of Alder. And we had two incumbents. And so they were being resupported by the Democratic Town Committee, as is pretty typical for how these things happen. And so after the town committee nominated the incumbents, I had the option as a party member to say, great, I recognize that these two people have been appointed as our slate. I'd like to challenge that. And so we worked for basically 15 days straight every single day. I clocked out of work early. We had a team together. We hit the streets and the neighborhoods that we'd spent a lot of time in, and we asked folks to sign a primary petition form, and we had to get 5% of eligible Democrats in the 5th district to qualify. And I'm happy to report that we got over our minimum number. We had so many people sign, and in some cases they were not registered Democrats or they were unaffiliated. In some cases they were like
side note, that's why it's important to get over your signatures, because some don't count at the end.
Correct. Yes. So we probably lost maybe a total of 20 signatures, which is great because we overestimated. And so the primary night party, we had a party back at my house, and it was so great. And, you know, you guys were there, and it was so great to be in a community together of folks who are just like, yeah, we lost, but that doesn't mean much. Like, we're not here to win this race. We are here to win races, you know, over the course of the next several years. We're here to say that it's time for new leadership in Waterbury. It's time for change, and it's time for fresh ideas. And that's what we're all about. And so I was super jazzed to have run with an incredible team and a lot of supporters, and you guys among my top supporters and friends and thought partners. That's how I felt after losing in the primary in September. I didn't make it to the general, but Dimitri, you did.
Yeah, and so Dimitri, kind of like you said, team, you ran.
Yes, I did run. And the conclusion from my run still has the same sentiment as Bilal. You know, when I first, you know, decided to go through the independent party, I thought that I would be, you know, devastated if we didn't win. We didn't win, and I felt the exact opposite. You know, ultimately, we lost by 34 votes, which, you know, I've been told, and which I believe is actually a pretty good thing.
Absolutely.
For someone who was just learning versus, you know, people who were already established in the game of politics. I've been receptive to the criticisms that have come my way from the people that I engaged with, you know, and just to be, you know, very transparent about that, people have come to me and said, you know, we understand what you were trying to do, but you didn't put yourself out there like you should have then. So that's something that I need to work on for next time if I'm fortunate, you know, to be go through the nomination process again. You know, there have been people who said, like, oh, we respect what you did, but, you know, for, you know, logistics and, you know, for how Waterbury is run, maybe you shouldn't have ran with the independents. Maybe you should have chose a party and everything. And I hear that. you know. And I'm, you know, I'll debate that with the in the future, you know, if I decide to run again. But the whole premise behind my campaign was to offer people new options. You know, there are more ideas out there than those that are just confined to, you know, the two major political parties.
Yeah.
Not to say that, you know, there aren't good ideas on both sides or on either side. But essentially, like, you know, we have options, and, you know, our votes shouldn't be taken for granted. We should earn your votes. We should come with ideas and give you a reason to come out and vote for us.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, you know, Dimitri, as someone who was in a party, I got criticism for playing in a party. Right. There is, you know, everyone is so quick.
That's interesting.
To offer advice, but maybe not help.
Or a vote. I mean, let's talk about it.
You know, so so I got criticized for primarying at all, right? And for not taking the seat for the Board of Alder when it was offered. But I, you know, like you, we are people with both time and conviction. And so,
ooh, I got time and conviction. Absolutely. Come on, get down a t-shirt.
2022 is the year of abundance. I'm saying it.
And you know, and it's unfortunate that you had to go through that. So it really begs the question, like, are political leaders seen as people who are loyal to party or actually loyal to their constituents, right? Because I mean,
are we ready for that on this Black Friday?
I guess we have to be, because it's a question that really needs to be asked. You know, Bilal, what I view it as, you primarying is just saying, like, you know, it's not saying that you're disloyal to the Democratic Party. It's just saying, like, you know what, there is something new to offer.
Absolutely.
Because times are always changing.
Right.
And if the people stay in, you know, in these positions of power for 8, 10, 15,
right,
20 years, it's like the ideas go stale.
Right.
And at the end of the day, that's just a fact.
And I think, too, and this is the last thing I'll say on this topic. Mm-hmm. We've got a lot of great questions. But from my perspective, it's always been, right, I've been a registered Democrat for as long as I could have been registered, right? Mm-hmm. I registered early because I would have been 18 by the time the next election happened. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And my opinion is that when something goes wrong in politics, local, state, federal, the people I'm going to criticize are my party, the party that promised me they would do things.
Absolutely.
Right? The oppositional politics, no one else has ever promised me that they're going to vote for my rights or my interests. Mm-hmm. My party has. Mm-hmm. And so when we fall short of that, why would I point fingers at people who have never claimed that we are aligned on certain policies? Right, I'm going to go after the ones who time and time again have been like, we are here for you, we want you, and we, you know, we like your interests. But so if that falls through, I'm going back to you guys. You said that you would do it for me, right? And we didn't.
Right.
Right? That's what it's like to be part of a party. Mm-hmm. It's that we are aligned with a vision, and we have to be in community with one another in a way that's accountable.
Right. And I mean, you would definitely take that approach if that very party is the one in power.
Absolutely. All the better. 100%.
Well, I'm going to pause. I have so many thoughts, but I do want to hear from Charnel as someone who is actively living this right now and is going to be living this process for the next few months. So, like, how are you doing? And, you know, share about your campaign, because you're also primarying, correct?
I am primarying.
There you go. I am primarying. So I agree. I think that the lane that I'm walking in has very similar kind of ridges in it as Dimitri and Bilal. I think what makes it a little bit different is that I feel like I'm kind of seen as almost, like, I don't know how to explain it. Like, I'm a threat. But I'm not valuable yet, you know? And so it's a strange place to be, where people have kind of tapped me on the shoulder and said, hey, man, we see what you're doing. And then
yes, the whisper campaign start immediately.
Right. And then there are people who are clearly in opposition of my potential candidacy, right, or nomination, who react to me without speaking to me. And people who are in a party that I, again, like Bilal, have been registered since I've been able to register. So it's been a weird line to walk. And it's not because I don't think that people's ideas have value. I just think that, as Fat Joe would say, that yesterday's price is not today's price. Mm. Like, things have gone up, right? And so the cost of decisions has risen.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
And the fallout is so much greater than it was. And so we need people who are willing to make tough choices, have difficult conversations, and to be honest and transparent and accountable. And so when we talk about opportunities, that people should have choices, people should also be aware of exactly what those choices are. And I think the difference in my campaign to folks who are probably seeking the same seat as me is that I'm willing to do that. I'm willing to tell you what I believe in. I'm willing to say it out loud, say it with my chest, you know, and talk you through it. If you disagree, I'm also willing to sit and hear why you disagree. And we don't even have to find middle ground. Like, we don't even have to find a compromise. I just want to know how you feel, because at the end of the day, if I make it to that seat, I still want you fed. I still want you covered. I still want you housed. I want your children to learn. I want your elders to be safe and protected and be able to age and like all those things. And so it's not as partisan as other people would want me to be. But it's also the people who I would hope align with my values have seemed to be the people who are trying the hardest to dislodge me on this process. So it's been interesting for sure.
So many wonderful bits in, like, my mind is like, ooh, what do I go to first? But one thing that everyone talked about was this idea of, like, party and disagreement. Mm-hmm. And I think that is my frustration with Waterbury politics and running with parties, and why I really like the idea of primarying, because it's kind of like you are loyal to no one but the people. Because I feel like we fall so in love with party, whatever, whether it's independent, Republican, Democrat, but they're all talking the same talk. They're all doing the same thing. We're all talking about safety, but no one is bringing the idea. No matter what party, like, no one is bringing the idea. I dare you to ask any of these people in office, what is your plan? And they have to go back and they have to ask their party. That is not politics. Sit down. I don't have time for that anymore. If 2020 did not show you that, then you need to wake up. And I'm more interested in, what are we going to do about this issue? And if you don't agree, well, what's the plan? You know what I mean? What are we going to get done? And so for me, the party politics is no longer attractive or interesting. And so I'm looking for change. Mm-hmm. And sometimes you think you're going to get that within party, no matter what that is, whether working family, libertarian, whatever. And I am more interested in people and candidates. Mm-hmm. And I'm really interested in pushing that narrative forward, because, again, I think especially, like, locally, I think more federally, like, party becomes a different conversation because of the issues and the alignment and the votes needed. But locally, really, like, the party, it becomes a little gray, for lack of a better term. And so there's a little bit more of a luxury to say, okay, who is this candidate? Because you're not losing so much because the party isn't tied. However, I do, because I, to be honest, feel like the Democrats and the Republicans vote the same, and they're just all wolves in sheep's clothing. Anyway, I'll say it. I'll say it.
Two hot takes. I've never had a custard cup and that.
Liz is letting them fly today, man.
You know, I'm still tough stuff from Turkey, but I want more. I want more, and I want more out of my politics and my city. And so that's all I'll say on that. But talk a little bit about the team aspect, because, you know, we're 5 minutes to the hour. Does that mean another break? Or, oh, my bad. Okay, we have 5 minutes to a break. So a team, as far as what has been helpful for you, Charnel, and then kind of Bilal and Demetrius, some who ran, like, that support system. Because a lot of times we see the candidate, but there is a team of people, whether that is friends, whether that supports, whether that's your own coping skills. Like, and I don't think people realize how much of a toll it is when you step into the ring. And, like, this was not something haphazard that any of us decided to do. And so, like, how has that been? Like, what's been helpful to keep your stamina up?
Well, I think everyone here could talk about the stress of campaigning. I lost 9 pounds in the first 2 weeks.
No.
I probably gained 9 pounds in the first 2 weeks.
I was happy to lose it, to be honest. But no, and a lot of it was that you have to kind of build yourself out, and you surround yourself with people who know you, who understand you, who know what your heart is, who know what your needs are, specifically personal needs, right? Because you really need to be spread over, like, 8 people. It's hard to do it by yourself. And the people I've chosen were specific for certain roles, right? Like, for instance, my treasurer, I picked him because he was diligent, right? Mm. I knew he's details-oriented, spreadsheets, he's that guy, and he's going to ask 18 questions until he's done. And so you need folks like that, but he also is aware of me, right? Known me forever. And then you have your kind of tangential satellite figures who are your friends who just know what's going on.
Yep.
And they'll flow in and out to help you out and give you information that you need. And so there are people that you have hands-on with, and then the people who are just kind of pouring some water into your well as they pass by, and you need both types.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I would second that, Charnel. I also picked my treasurer because of his ability to be detail-oriented and understand the bigger process. And for those who don't know, Charnel was my campaign treasurer. And it was, I mean, absolutely, we had... You know, I had zero idea what I was doing when I announced. And there was, for a while there, every day I started my morning by calling or emailing the State Elections Enforcement Commission in Hartford, because they, you know, they were the final say on what I could do or what I couldn't do or what I needed to do. And they were immensely helpful. What highly shameless self-plug for the State Elections Enforcement Commission. They were very friendly, very helpful. And especially in a time when on the local level, I didn't have a lot of
They are not navigation. Telling you the secrets to the sauce. You better call.
Right, right. You have to figure it out. And so Charnel and I went from knowing zilch to not only running what I would consider a successful Alder campaign, but now to running a successful campaign for state Senate.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And I think a very underrated aspect of this team is, yes, you know, you have to choose someone to be your treasurer, someone to be your campaign manager and everything. But sometimes you just need like a confidence boost from time to time, because a campaign weighs a lot on the mental and definitely your emotional state as well.
Yep.
So, you know, I know when I was running, I had a very close friend that, you know, whenever I got frustrated with, you know, something logistically, maybe something down the town clerk's office, or maybe I didn't get the response that I wanted when I did something I really worked really hard on. I could call him and he was just like, no, Dimitri, you know, it's going to be okay. Just keep doing it. And, you know, your message will be well received. Lo and behold, it's true.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but sometimes you just need that mental health boost, especially in today's age.
Yeah,
absolutely. You definitely need those people, whether they're friends or like those unsuspecting people in the community that they're, you know, they're like, I like what you're doing. You know, you need that. And so it was so reinvigorating to be connected with those people through the campaign that really see what you're trying to do, not your party, but you.
Yeah.
And so we'll end there because we're about to go on a break. And so listen, we're taking calls at 12:30. If you want to participate in this hot topic conversation, the call-in number is 203-757-1320. Okay, we are back. And Valala has an interesting comment on Facebook. Share with us.
Yeah, so we've been looking through our Facebook comments. I wanted to read one to welcome us back from the top of the hour. Someone is saying, Amanda is saying, I have never heard candidates of any party speak so openly and authentically about the campaign process. How refreshing and real. Thank you, Amanda, for that comment. Thanks, everyone, for all the love on Facebook Live. We're going to go to a caller, our first caller. We decided we'll take a call early since we have one soon. The number to call is 203-757-1320. We'll take a call and then get back to our conversation.
Welcome, caller.
Hey guys,
we can hear you.
Call. Cliff from Waterbury. Hey, listen, for the most part, let me first start off by saying this, that this mayor has more control over the Democratic Party than I've ever seen in recent politics. You know, and so when the Republican Party said that, you know, the mayor can control the Board of Aldermen, particularly the Democrats, they're absolutely right. You know, of course, the mayor would deny it, you know, saying that they have freedom of choice. But even during the campaign, I don't believe you had any of the incumbent, now correct me if I'm wrong, aldermen come on the show or even campaign, particularly the black ones. Now, am I right or wrong?
So the question for those on Facebook who can't hear, Cliff is saying about the campaign process and having candidates be open and to kind of share in the limited visibility that particularly the Democratic Party has in terms of campaigning, whether it's radio or door to door.
Yeah.
And so let's take this program. You know, for example, now you guys came on the independents, particularly the black, the African-Americans, and you guys had a platform. You know, I agree and I voted for you guys. You know,
thank you for your vote. Question,
thank you, you know, for voting.
Yeah, I'm not afraid to say it. You know, not me. You know, and so you had a platform, you had a base, and you know, it made sense. You know, but the black ones, you know, the two that are current, never came on the program. And I mentioned this to Steve. You know, of course, he, you know, him and I go at it all the time. I don't know if you guys listen to the show, but nevertheless, they didn't campaign. And so, Demetrius, to you, in terms of you needing more campaigning, you know, that's not true at all. The simple fact of the matter is that blacks that are endorsed or hand-picked by the mayor are the ones that get the nod and they get the support. And for the most part, the black people here in Waterbury, particularly church folks, but black people, they are loyal to the Democratic Party. Now, Vernon Matthew has a great platform. You know, he speaks. He's a Republican. But even when he ran, he gets no support. And out of the aldermen, he would be the most vocal or more supportive of issues mm-hmm. that impact the black community. But black folks just won't vote Republican. You know, so the point I'm making is that either you, and I said this to you, and I shared this from the beginning, knowing this, either you're going to have to go Democrat. But even if you go Democrat, you would have to be handpicked by the mayor because that's how powerful and how much he controls this whole process. Right. So you guys can campaign as much as you want. If you don't get the blessing or the endorsement from the mayor, you know, in terms of being a Democrat, then you're fighting a losing battle, particularly the blacks. Now,
yep.
Thank you for your question, well, and you gave us so many talking points. So I'm going to pause you right there because, like, all of us are, like, itching to get there. So for those on Facebook, Cliff continued to talk about running and having a platform in regards to African American or black candidates and them being vocal and also supported by the community. And I think that's really interesting because, well, I'll be transparent. I feel that in the city, we vote the way we vote, and there's limited change unless someone says, I'm going to get off. Is that Bilal or my headphones?
That's Bilal.
So, you know, I feel that you have to reinvigorate new voters. And I think that comes by kind of, Charnel, you had hit on about having a very specific platform. And so, what do you kind of think? What are your thoughts on running as a person of color as well as inspiring other people of color to vote for you? Or do you feel like they're just going to be like, I usually vote for this person, I'm going to vote?
Yeah, so I also have to clarify, like, I'm a person of color, but I'm a black man. Mm-hmm. And so I walk certain lines when I have to, you know, meet new people or walk in certain spaces. And I'm also a fairly large black man. So there's a presence that I have that I didn't ask for, but it is useful, right? People tend to pay attention to you. And so as far as kind of getting in and running as a black man, honestly, it is hard for me specifically because I have to now politicize things that I do anyway for the community.
Mm.
And so, like, when people are telling you, like, well, you have to reinvigorate new voters, and I'm like, well, I'm talking to voters every, like, for instance, holiday seasons,
mm-hmm.
right? When this is the most volunteer opportunities that pop up, and you have the most times to have face-to-face touch points with your neighbors, your community, this is when I'm usually doing it, like, a lot. And so now that I'm running, I have to have those conversations, and those conversations have changed because of who I am now. I'm no longer just Charnel the volunteer, I'm Charnel the candidate.
Mm-hmm.
And when I'm talking to people, they're like, oh man, you know, you are going to do something. Like, you're mm-hmm. different. You're here. And that's what I think needs to happen. If we're going to invigorate people, and as people of color, we recognize that there are a few more lines that we have to cross to get, you know, to the mountaintop, so to speak. And so the best way to do that is, we kind of talked about a team earlier, is to have a base behind you, have mm-hmm. people who believe in you. Have people who know that when you say something, you'll do it. When you show up, that you actually show up to do the work mm-hmm. and not just to use people as props. Like, those things matter. Mm-hmm. And so if we're going
not using people as
right.
props.
And so mm-hmm. if we're going to do it, if we're going to say we're running for office, we actually need to run. It's a verb. Mm-hmm. Like, so we need to get in there. And so I think it's a little bit easier for me because this isn't me putting on a new hat. It's mm-hmm. just me putting a lens on it now.
Mm-hmm. Dimitri?
Yeah, so this is a very loaded question. And this is a very loaded question. And I've been, this whole time, I've been thinking about how I wanted to answer. So I'll answer it this way, Cliff, because, you know, you actually asked me, you actually said my name in reference to my race in particular. So I'm going to speak to you like straight black man to black man at the end of the day. So I agree with you to the point where it does seem like black people have a very strong marriage, for better or for worse. Some sort of like a domestic violence marriage to the Democratic Party as a whole. I will agree with you on that. And it's definitely here in Waterbury. So the question I want to leave, you know, you and, you know, anybody else who's listening, particularly the black community, do you feel like you have power here in Waterbury? Right. And it goes to this idea of, are we fighting for power? Do we want power, or do we just want influence? Because they're two distinct different things. I am an advocate for power, and we do not have that in our current situation here in Waterbury. And I'll explain what I mean by that. I was on the campaign trail, and I was on Lincolndale Drive, and I spoke to a resident there. And if you didn't know, I did like a combined ticket with Team Waterbury. I was an independent candidate, but I was also endorsed by the Republicans. And I knocked on this door, and I talked to this lady, and she liked everything I was telling her, my ideas and everything. I gave her my card. And I left. Literally 15 minutes later, she calls me and she says, "No, Dimitri, are you a Republican? Because like, if you are, I don't want there to be any conflicts." And then my first thought was, and you know, and I said this to her, was like, "What do you mean by conflicts?" She was like, "Cause I'm a Democrat, and you know, you're listed as a Republican, even though I'm an independent candidate. I was just cross endorsed by both." She was like, "I don't want there to be any conflict." And she was an older lady, and it kind of reinforces the idea of this marriage that we have to the party. Now, if you, Cliff, you said it, Liz said it, I say it, Charnel said it, there's four black people right now having this conversation who don't feel like they have power here in the city, or that they're being ignored here in the city. Now, District 2, my district, believe it or not, have three people of color as their aldermen, all three. Two black people and one Latino person. Or Latinx person, I'm sorry. And the people in the district don't feel like they're being heard. We have some of the lowest income in the entire city. Our parks are run down, if we have any. We like Martin Luther King Park, for example, you know. And we always compare. We have a lot of liquor stores, a lot of potholes, you know, some areas that we need to walk on, but no sidewalks. It's just a whole bunch of things that when you compare to other parts of the city is different. But the reason I said the influence versus power is because we find ourselves asking these people who know our conditions, we find us asking for better conditions. And I don't know how many times that they need to throw it in our face and say, like, you know, it's whatever. Just do whatever you have to do. We don't care about it right now. And we still keep giving them our vote. At that moment in time, we give away our power because they're entitled to our vote. So they don't have to come in here and do anything. We did a whole campaign this year, and how many Democratic aldermen did you see knock on your door? Let's be honest. How many literature did you see on your door? I've seen a post on the DTC website, and then I saw them giving out, you know, showing up to dinners, and that was about it. But when we're out here knocking on doors, we're out here collecting phone numbers, we're out here, you know, doing Facebook Lives, and we don't get that same reception, it begs the question, why don't we get that versus people who don't do anything get that? You know, and it's a larger issue, and this is why I think that the focus for the next 2 years, and well, my focus personally, will be what I call capacity building, trying to teach my black community and other communities of color and Waterbury as a whole that we have some things that we have to unlearn before we can learn new things. So if we unlearn that, you know, we only have two choices to vote for, or if we unlearn that, you know, that these people are entitled to our votes, which we currently believe, then we can learn how we really accumulate power, and then we'll actually see the change in our community that we seek. Now, I mean, I know that's like a lot of things, and it may have been all over the place, but
no, because what I hear is, again, this wanting more and demanding of it, no longer mm-hmm. asking for it. So similar in regards to primarying, you're saying mm-hmm. no longer is it mm-hmm. I'm going to wait for you to tell me it's my turn. I'm going to take my turn because I want more and I know I'm deserving of more. Absolutely. And I don't have to take your handouts. I will take what I want and need for my community and my own salvation. So mm-hmm. Charnel, you look like you had something to say.
No, I mean, there is a lot of things I had wanted to say, simply because there's a lot I agree with Dimitri. And I'm of the mindset that, like, power, like, we believe that power is equitable in a way that it isn't, right? So it has to be demanded. Like, people aren't actively going to share it with us mm-hmm. if they've had it for too long. And I believe what the truth is, Dimitri, I think it's actually the flip. It's not that we feel they're entitled to their vote. It's that they feel that they're entitled to our votes, that they've been there long enough. They have a very Hillary Clinton-esque attitude of, you need to Google me because I've been doing this for so long, you know? And like, what are you, like, why would you give it to anybody else? And I said it the last time I was on the radio here, that these elected officials serve at the consent of the governed. And what do we do when that consent is coerced? Right. When people aren't being honest about what they're going to do when they get into those positions, when people are ignoring you or feeling that they don't have to share themselves with you because you're going to vote for me anyway, because what other choices do you have?
Ooh, right. And so that is the trap. Yes.
Right.
And I wanted to, you know, just expand upon that. And it's, you have to pay attention to what the people in power do mm-hmm. because they have a way of giving you the bare minimum. Mm-hmm. And then everybody's like, all right, that's something. Like, you have to crawl before you walk, or, mm-hmm. you know, it might not be what we want, but it's, you know, something that we want right now. And I'll give you a perfect example. Just last year, racism as a public health crisis was trying to be put on the agenda. Like, people, mm-hmm. we wanted that here in Waterbury because we know that there is systemic racism in all our systems. Mm-hmm. And we wanted that addressed specifically, not just in a larger package. Right. So what happened? It didn't get. They got voted down. They didn't even get brought up to a vote, actually. That was one thing.
Paul Penarewski said that he was going to put it into a committee and mm-hmm. that within 6 months there would be an answer.
Right. And then around the same time, they put a Black Lives Matter flag on City Hall, mm-hmm. performative. And then they made a diversity council, right?
Right.
Which originally wasn't, sorry, I did a whole thing on my podcast about this. The diversity council was not in regards to that issue. It was in regards to George Floyd, and you'll see back in articles like in June before
right.
you guys advocated, that's what that was for. It had nothing to do with racism.
Right. It didn't have it to do with it exactly per se, but it was all around the same general concept, the same general
it's
time.
It's a cop out that the city did, and we're still waiting on.
Right.
Sorry.
And that's the point I'm trying to bring, because the diversity council was made, and then we haven't heard a single thing about racism ever since that moment.
Yeah.
So it's either like the mayor and whoever decided to put this together knew that if this was done, that a majority of people were just going to fall back and be like, all right, that's something. And then handpick like people who would be on the council.
Right.
Or it's a problem with us and we just let them get away with it. So if we're letting them get away with it, we're giving them power and we're only asking for influence at the end of the day. I mean,
still waiting on them 6 months to have a decision, but it's all.
And you know what? Let me stop. I'll jump in
to meet you. So when the first resolution to declare racism as a public health crisis went to the board, I believe it was voted to be put on file, which meant that they're not really going to look at it. They'll look at it again later. One of the criticisms was that it wasn't Waterbury specific, which the resolution itself was one that was being passed around a lot of towns. The idea was that you would take, here's the bare bone infrastructure of a resolution. You take it, modify it, present it to your local board. We submitted pretty much the same boilerplate resolution. I think a relatively fair criticism, because we need to make sure that what we're talking about when we're trying to change policy in Waterbury is specific to our needs. And so I actually worked with then Alder Brenda Lizcato and rewrote the resolution. She and I rewrote a mm-hmm. second version of the resolution with the support of the Human Rights Commission. I mean, mm-hmm. we spent hours on Zoom calls looking through documents from Waterbury Health Department, through the Greater Waterbury Health Partnership, through national and federal sources. We created a resolution, in our opinion, Brenda, if you're listening, I feel like you would agree that resonates and resembles what we are looking for here in Waterbury. The goal of our second version of the resolution was to mandate that city departments have to factor in race-based disparities, which is nowhere mandated. Uh-huh. With that coming with a greater look at how departments collect data. Right, because we can't say something is a race-based disparity if we have not collected race data for 20 years. Mm-hmm. Right now, we know because we experience it it is. Uh-huh. But we need to have those facts to back it up. I think, though, Dimitri, to your other point, when we were advertising ourselves for this podcast, or sorry, not for this podcast, for this radio show, I labeled myself a theory buff, and one of the theories that I prescribed to is around how power develops in a community, and. There was a power theorist who said, where there is resistance, there is power. And where there's power, there's resistance. And what people tend to think that means is that when there is a conglomerate of power, there is always a force to resist against it. Mm. But that's sort of taken askew. What that really means is that when there are people or systems in power, there are artificial and coordinated resistance. Right. So much if you think of power or local politics as like a steam boiler, there has to be a steam valve to let off pressure before the whole thing explodes. Right. In a lot of ways, these performative ways of granting power or we're listening to your thoughts, we're listening to this, we're doing that. Uh-huh. That is the steam valve in action. We're saying, hey, we're going to relieve pressure off the main system by giving you X, Y, Z. Uh-huh. All while never addressing the root of the cause.
Absolutely.
Right. And so we become very accustomed to. Mm-hmm. To letting off steam off the main component of the system while we busy ourselves looking at all these other things, right? Mm-hmm. But all that does is it perpetuates the same old, and we don't actually get the chance to address things systemically or systematically because we're like, oh, great, we don't feel so much pressure. We're not so tight anymore, right? This is good. A year goes by and nothing's changed.
Mm-hmm. So, like, funny visual, like, ADD. So, like, you were talking about that, and so I could think about, like, a Thanksgiving dinner and, like, learning to accommodate people, and, like, you know, you have, like, Uncle Joe or whatever who just, like, is not changing, and so you learn how to adjust so that you are not wrapped into the crazy, and I feel like that has kind of happened. As residents, we've learned how to adjust, and it becomes, like, wait a minute, we didn't get anything done, and then you try and engage in this civil conversation with the city and do things that other cities do and normally function, and then city still being city, still being kind of and then we fall back into this circle. And how do we get off that hamster wheel? How do we, does it start with this primary process of getting new people in? Does it start with continuing to challenge these ideas? How do we do that?
I believe in the primary process, right? I believe in getting into that thing that you are a part of and saying, I knocked at the front door and you didn't let me in. So now I came through the side door and here I am and we're going to run. You know, that's what we decided was
no longer taking a no. Yeah.
Well, and because what we've found and what I talked to a lot of people who have long since moved out of Waterbury, and some of them said, I got tired of waiting.
Oh,
you know, because we have like this city overall has a retention problem. Mm-hmm. We do not retain people who have great ideas and great insights and who have a deep passion and love for their community. We don't retain them. Mm-hmm. You know, they'll go to New Haven where things are ready to go, right? Mm-hmm. It's like turnkey. You want to become a community organizer, you want to change local politics, go to a city that has that infrastructure built in. Mm-hmm. We, I said this to Charnel many times, we are building from a deficit. Mm-hmm. Right, it's like when your bank account is negative $10. I'm trying to get us to $0. I'm trying to get us to have no money rather than negative amounts of dollars. Right, we just don't have the infrastructure currently for change making, and that's why this is, from my perspective, is really about this movement building approach. Mm-hmm. How do we remain unified, remain on track, and think about things in a 10-year plan, not the next cycle or 6 months or the next meeting.
So, first, before I give any extra thoughts, do we have anything on Facebook?
Yeah. Okay. I can read a couple of these comments here. Our friend Keisha is saying the Black Lives Matter flag hanging in front of City Hall was 100% disrespectful to black people and every other race of people in this city. Keisha also believes in the primary process. Dwayne, a little bit before, said we have to break the red versus blue cycle. To run a strong campaign, you have to have a strong foundation and core. We have to hit the streets. The people have the power and they don't even know it. Think about it. In the 50s and 60s, think of civil rights movements and the Black Panther Party. We have to go to the people directly. That's Dwayne Pittman. Absolutely, Dwayne.
You know,
Go ahead. No, go ahead.
I agree with that 100%. You know, Dwayne was a person. He's my brother. He's a role model for me. He does a lot of stuff in the community if you do know him. One thing that he did that I actually wanted to you know, jump on, he would, you know, go to Truman Apartments. Those are the projects across from Eblen's, on North Main Street.
Yep.
And he would just, you know, do things for the community there. You know, just talk to the parents, you know, do book bag drives for the kids, you know, and then he took me along with him. We were just playing basketball. And then, you know, just talking to the families there, one, they're surprised that people even come there for a multitude of reasons. One, people don't care. And then I guess there's a stigma, a negative stigma around them as an area that's dangerous, you know. But it takes a special effort to go out and talk to people. Mm-hmm. At the end of the day, and Bilal, you should know this from, you know, knocking on doors, especially like around Ridgewood and Willow Street. Yep. That was your district, right?
Oh, yeah.
Like, these are areas where there are high presence of, you know, black and brown voters, right? People who have given up on the system because they don't see anything changing.
Right.
Mm-hmm. They don't believe that people believe in their best interests. And, you know, they don't feel like they're being heard, or they simply just don't know about the process, about anything there. So the capacity building is people who just, you know, unfortunately we lost in our campaigns for the next 2 years or so.
Right.
We knock on their doors like, this is what happens. This is what we can do if we brought you into the system. And I know it's hard to believe in it right now. But I promise you, it will be a lot better off if you're included in this process.
Yeah, we have a Facebook comment that says, you can stay unified when those in the circle don't take the crumbs offered by leaders to change sides. Mm-hmm. That's from Glenn, a listener on the Facebook Live. I think, Dimitri, you came with me canvassing Willow Street one day.
Yeah, that's exactly why I said it. Yeah.
I mean, and I remember I asked a woman who lived on in the neighborhood, and I said, you know, what's your biggest concern? And she like leaned her head over her railing by her front door and said, the liquor store on the corner. Mm-hmm. And I was like, that's your biggest concern? She's like, it is the most disruptive and it makes me feel the least safe in my neighborhood. Going back to like where we prioritize what gets allowed in the city versus what doesn't, that liquor store on the corner to her was just like, she's like, I don't let my kids go outside because people, you know, run up and down the street, like speed up and down the street and they turn the corners too quickly. And she's like, I lived here for 35 years. And
and like legislation could be enacted to do zoning and things like that to rectify that. And sometimes I think we get satisfied with elected officials showing up and not doing things. And I care less about you coming to the community meeting because that's okay. I can do that. I come to the community meeting. I can come and do things. Mm-hmm. I can't legislate. So I need you to legislate so that I can have change. And I want more of that. I want more of, you know, policy change from those that are in office. Sure. Now, did you have anything to add? Saw you was thinking.
No, I'm always thinking. Yeah. So, no, I'm like you. Bilal and I and a group of our buddies, we were at a community conversation. It was right around my birthday. It was like, it had to be like late September. Mm-hmm. And I asked two of our elected officials at the state level. I said, well, specifically, what are you two going to do? We heard all of these issues at the conversation. People were passionate. There were tears. Mm-hmm. And so what legislation are you authoring? Mm-hmm. or co-sponsoring that directly, you know, relates to what we're talking about. And they both looked at me as if I had threatened, you know, their puppies, like as I was out of line or something. And it was bewildered me. And there was no response. There was no adequate answer. But the whole conversation prior to that was how much they cared and how much they wanted to do things. And you see posts about how Thanksgiving time and holiday season is time to give. And I'm sitting here thinking, like, if only there was a body of people whose job it is to go to a place and create policy to alleviate some of these pressures. If only there were a body of 36 and a body of 151 people who go to our Capitol.
Those are oddly specific numbers, Chernow. Do they resonate from anywhere?
And do something that says, you know what? That mom doesn't have to be hungry along with her kids. Like, they could have appropriate housing. They could have these things because I have a hand on the wheel. We've given you that hand on the wheel. Because you told us you would steer correctly. And now we're in the back seat and you're telling us to shut up between election cycles.
Right.
And so I think the priority has to be the people first. I think that we need to remind elected officials, and primaries are a great way to do that.
Absolutely.
Are a great way to remind that you serve because we say you can, not because you tell us you will. And so now... That's why we have the people who try to shut you out when you try to get in where you fit in, is because it belongs to them. In their head, it is their seat. It is their spot. And how dare you or anyone in your community kind of take that power back or get your seat back at the table. So us, as a movement that's growing, our friends, our family members, our other community members who are listening in, we do, and I think it was Keisha who said it in the chat, that the power does belong to the people. People power is the most powerful thing you can have in a campaign. I don't care how much money you can raise. I don't care how much of your own money you can throw into a race.
Right.
If you do not know people and know what their needs are, you cannot be audacious enough to say that you can represent them.
Right.
And you need to know your place.
Audacious enough to know.
Right. Know your actual place, and that place just might be at your home.
Well, and especially because people power doesn't mean showing up at every time there's a tent at a nonprofit event. Right? People power is knowing when people's birthdays are. It's knowing when they're going through hardship. It's knowing that if they have a struggle, that you are providing them with a resource that feels like they could actually solve the problem. At that same community conversation Charnel is referencing, you know, someone was talking about their own literal experience being homeless, living in their car for 2 months. And the response was, well, call 211.
It's like, child, did you call 211? Because, like,
you know, like how are you going to look at someone in the face who is saying, during a time when there was an eviction, where we could not be evicted, I was evicted and lived in my car, and you're telling me to call 211 when you are the person who has the keys to changing policy? Homelessness and poverty is a policy choice.
Yes.
We could legislate that out if we had the will to do so. I refuse to believe otherwise, because that assumes that the way things are now are the way they have to be. And if that was the case, then I don't think any four of us would be here this morning.
But I think... No, go ahead, Charnel.
No, I was going to say that. That's been one of my major points on this campaign, is that things don't happen by accident. Like, bills are analyzed all the time. They know what fallout is going to look like, who will be disproportionately affected by what. And so when I see things like housing and homelessness and our elected officials staring us in the face, asking us, well, what can we do? And it's like, you can do this, because this is not just a policy failure.
Right.
At some point, and I've said it, it's a moral failure. Like, you don't care. And, like, we could do those things, and we can do hard things. We can do difficult things. It's just that you have to prioritize it. And we should be able to look at our elected officials and look at the things they vote for, the things that they actually speak on when they go into the city hall or the Capitol, and say, well, these are the things you're prioritizing, and none of them touch me at all. Why? Right. And so I would love to see the accountability piece and the transparency piece, and primaries, you know, being a good way of doing that, demand that.
Right.
You have to tell people who you are if you're trying to delineate.
I just want to remind folks, you know, where our show ends at 1, it's 12:40. If you'd like to call in, 203-757-1320. We'll keep chatting until we get a phone call, and we're going to have a break in a minute, too.
I think we'll break there, and then we'll come back and we'll kind of take the show to its close with some calls and some final thoughts.
Thanks, everyone.
Welcome back. Listen, you guys have hung with us for a very long time. We appreciate it. My name is Liz, and I am here with Bilal, Charnel, and Dimitri as we take over Talk of the Town for these 2 hours. We're coming to a close, and we have a question that we're going to go to on the air before we kind of close out with some final thoughts. Caller, how you doing?
Hey, good afternoon. Thank you for the show. It's an important show. I'm a member of a minority group. I'm blind. In fact, I was born in Waterbury, and in 1954, when my mother took on the city and the school department and everybody, I became the first blind child in the United States that was allowed to go to public school.
Mm.
A lot of what the black community has dealt with since the 50s and 60s and on, I've dealt with. There were teachers right there in Waterbury whose names I could tell you right now. Who one of them, all the way into the fall of 66 when I entered my senior year of high school, put his hands on me first day of school and literally threw me out of the classroom screaming, I told them I don't want the blind kid in my class.
Wow.
Mm.
Okay, so I understand. I've spent most of my life finding ways to empower myself. Because you're right, the handouts come very, very sparse, and they're always way too late. They have eaten Thanksgiving dinner for Easter, and so here's what I love your conversation. I love the intelligence, and I love the just you've been there. You really know the deal. You're just not talking words.
Thank you.
If I could hear from you. I have found that you can go into the world with your shopping list, but usually there's a few things that only would change 1% of the problem.
Mm-hmm.
But there's a couple of items on the list that would be 25% or 50% of the problem fixed. I would love to hear from each of you as you close the show. What's that 50%? One thing. If you could only fix one thing this year, what would it be that would make the greatest impact to help your community?
Oh my gosh, wonderful question and wonderful comments. Mm-hmm. For those listening on Facebook, we had a gentleman who identified as being blind, and he discussed his experience as a child in school and how he was physically touched and said, I don't want the blind kid in there. And he talked about how solutions often come too late and how when solutions do come, they really, it's kind of like that small ripple. They affect that small percentage. And so his question to us was, what if you can do one thing to make a large impact of change? What would it be? Okay, and so, listen, I'm going to be a strategist here. Okay, there's four of us here.
Yep.
So if we all change one thing, okay, this is the cheat code.
Okay.
Bilal, do you want to go first? I saw your
start.
Hand.
Yeah. I appreciate the caller and sharing your perspective with us. One of the topics that is really close to me is how not only Waterbury, but how we overall treat our older adults, right? And so when your comment is so well taken, when we think about how, you know, the typical quote-unquote disabled or disability, right? There's a new, you know, going back to the theory buff thing, there's a new way of thinking of ourselves as all being temporarily able-bodied, right? Like right now, today, we have control of our faculties and our movements and our bodies, and that's great. We're riding high.
Mm-hmm.
But the longer we live, the less likely that is to be true.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And so
that could change in a moment.
That could change in a moment. Absolutely. I would like to see Waterbury actually really, really, really buff up two places in particular, which is our senior center and our public library, as those are two places where, like in Newington, it's the Newington Senior and Disabled Center. Right, because they recognize that there's a cross hatch of services that folks need access to, right? Movement services and assistive technologies are important across the age spectrum when you're looking at folks with disabilities. I would love to see increased funding for the senior center and the library and more of an outreach effort to make sure folks have assistive technologies when needed.
Mm. Oh man, so if we're thinking 50%. I was walking a line on what I wanted to pick, and I'm falling somewhere between like public and community education, because I can hit eight different balls with that. I think access to quality education and instruction throughout all years that a child is in school has a major impact starting before kindergarten, right? Child, like early child care is a huge piece where, you know, learning social skills, but also your academic pieces and brain development. But community education, as far as skill sets, I would argue life skills. Bilal kind of touched on it a bit. I'm a huge fan of intergenerational communities. Mm-hmm. I grew up in one where we all knew our senior members and our middle-aged neighbors and the kids and who they belong to. I believe that it's hard to put the onus on one. Typically, it's like one kid. If you make it out, then you can figure it out and then you'll change something, where it doesn't work like that. I think that we need to lift everyone up in a community or in a family to do that. So I would love to see folks learn how to budget better and utilize their finances and what credit is and what credit does, how to adequately like look for a job that fits your skills, how to write a proper resume and actually be able to like sell yourself well. A lot of folks don't believe that they learn skills on certain jobs that they actually have learned, so I would love to see those programs be created. And that also falls into like public health and figuring out like nutritionist pieces, fitness pieces, activity pieces that aren't just competitive sports related. But yeah. I think that would do a lot to increase just connection amongst the community, but also value in community.
Awesome, Dimitri.
Right. I'm going to go on the other side of the line that Bilal was on, and kind of what was touched upon by Charnel. And the one thing I would change is the narrative surrounding our youth now. It seems our youth have been struggling in Waterbury for years. And it seems like there is an agenda on them right now that is highlighting problems that have been persistent for the past 10, 15, 20 years. Right. What I'm a firm believer that it takes a village to raise a child. And that mentality is absent here in the city right now. And we have to accept that as a fact. And then we also have to accept the fact that with this narrative, we are disparaging the future of Waterbury. And that's either...
That's why youth don't stay, they leave.
That's exactly. Right. That's right. And I was literally just about to say that. So that's why our youth leave when they're able to. They go off to greener pastures, whether that's down south or another Connecticut town. Or they're thrown into the system of a revolving door of criminality. And then we complain when they come back to our city and they don't, and they're not viewed as quote unquote upstanding citizens or whatever you want to call them, right? So changing the narrative is the biggest portion, but of course a lot of things stems from that. That's where the education, the community education will come in. That's where, you know, we would look at the curriculums that our kids are learning. We would look at the conditions that their and their families are living in. We would look at after school activities. We would look at summer programs. We would look at the jobs that our kids are going through. We would look at vocational programs that would let them be competitive in the 21st century and beyond. So that's the one thing that I would change, and I'm a little bit biased because I work with youth to this very day, but I think that, you know, they are underappreciated, over-attacked, and neglected group of here in the community.
Absolutely. All right, I'm coming in for the close. I'm biased as well as a mental health provider. I think a lot of these problems are... co-occurring and related, and I would like us to be a trauma-informed city. I would like us to be a trauma-informed society because, again, we just came off this pandemic and we're like baffled as to why isn't the world back to normal, right? We keep putting all these pressures on whether it's youth, people, and we're like, why can't, you know, they function? And I think if we learn to have a lens of being trauma-informed, we would understand why our youth are upset. We would understand why housing is important. Because if you want someone to go to work and function and vote and do all these things, but they don't know where they're going to lay. We would understand how lack of hunger and all these things impacts everything. So I would like us to have a trauma-informed lens. And... that was a fantastic question, but yes, it was a heavy question. And so to end the show in these last 5 minutes, I end on my own podcast, Coffee and Convos, which you can find on podcast listening sites or the coffeeconvoslist.com website. And I asked my listeners, you know, what's in your cup? And what that means is, like, what do you need right now? What are three things that you need right now to have a better day and better week? And so I'm going to ask this to my co-host here, but before you guys think of yours, I'll give you mine. So what I need this weekend, this day, to have a better day and week, I need cleaning. House looks a mess. I need to do that.
Amen to that.
Haven't had my tea today, so I need some tea. And I want to do some, like, writing and just kind of be in that creative space. So that's what I need. Rapid fire. We have 4 minutes left. Dimitri, I'm going to pass to you. What do you do?
Okay. I need some sleep. Right. I need some, you know, some quality time with some with my friends and family. And I just need a new activity to do. I don't know what it is. I just have the urge to do something new. So I'll let you guys know what that is when I figure it out.
Charnel, what you got?
Nice. I also need sleep. That is something that I was up all day instead of hosting Thanksgiving, so I need some sleep. I need some me time. I think that's something that people don't get enough of, when you can just be yourself or be with yourself. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to find some of that this weekend. And I also need leftovers. I'm hungry. My stomach's been growling this whole time. I'm just thinking, I know what's in that fridge and I know what I want. So those are the three things I need.
All right, Bilal.
I'm going to say, Liz, that last time you asked me this, I'm going to say it again. I think right now it's like the cup overflows. I don't need any. This has been a fantastic way to start the weekend. It's been
so what has it filled with?
It is filled with three of my closest friends. It is filled with great conversations and hope for change in Waterbury and understanding and sympathetic listeners on the radio and on Facebook Live. Happiness has a capacity and we've hit it. This has been fantastic. I have so enjoyed this time with everyone.
Well, everyone, I urge you, ask yourself, what do you need? You know, what do you need? And do it this weekend. Let it be a weekend of rest. Thank you for hanging with us. And thank you, WATR. Always a pleasure to come and be a co-host. Shout out to Chris, who's been awesome helping us on the sound.
Awesome.
Absolutely.
Everyone have a great and wonderful rest of your holiday weekend. Take care.
Thanks, everyone.